Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines, in-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome in to the 512th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news right here in the Pacific Northwest and beyond. As we move through this month of April 2024 on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. The city of Portland has some very serious decisions to make when it comes to the next fiscal year's budget. And it looks like some of the city's bureau's first responders could be on the chopping block, including $11 million that needs to be chopped from the budget of Portland Fire and Rescue. One of the rumors is that station number 23 in Southeast Portland, which was closed for years, then reopened, might have to be closed again. The city's hosting listening sessions online. During one earlier this week, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler said this.
Let me give it to you straight. I have to be the first one to propose a budget. There will be something in this budget for everybody to be upset about.
He is not wrong. On Thursday morning, my partner Veronica and I got perspective from Portland Fire and Rescue's Rick Graves.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Engine 23 was exceptionally helpful on a structural fire we had in Southeast overnight last night. So a loss of 23s would be unfortunate in a specific example just like that, where they provided an incredible amount of assistance and guidance on the fire and really were able to help command. But that goes for any fire station. We've got that capability and skill set throughout the city. And I don't know of any specific identification of a potential shutdown of 23s. From my standpoint, I have not been told that, but we have proposed that in order to meet the $11 million budget that we may be short, or $11 million shortfall, we may end up closing our two-person rescues that operate out of the southeast part of town, an area of town that we incorporated back in 1984 as far as the fire service agency is concerned. And the area has grown up around those stations. So the infrastructure has significantly changed. The occupancy load, we went from single-story ranch houses on large lots to flag lots to multi-unit housing developments. And so those fire stations are augmented with two-person rescues to serve the population out in Southeast. And if we're asked to come up with ways to remove $11 million from our operational budget, part of that is our core services on the ground, and that would be those rescues and potentially a station, as you mentioned. Now, I'm unaware of the station 23 is already been previously identified. So I don't think it's a 23 definition, but we did have station 23 shut down for a minute or two and then upstaffed it with a two-person rescue, and we're able to obtain a grant to provide the remainder of the cost differences to open it back up to a four-person engine company, which I explained earlier was extremely helpful to our organization and our community just last night.
Remarkable.
In the Selwood neighborhood.
Yeah, remarkable. And Southeast, you touched on a couple times. Rick Graves with Portland Fire and Rescue is with us. How about the street response? Could be on the budget. Do you guys have to pitch in there and as well, and how might that affect you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the Portland Street Response is underneath our community health services and within Portland Fire and Rescue. We have both the Community Health Assess and Treat Team CHAT, and then the Portland Street Response PSR. PSR responds to behavioral health issues on the street. And they primarily are in service to divert police officers away from mental crises where people feel as if the presence of a badged police officer might exacerbate the situation. So Portland Street Response goes in and addresses the behavioral health issues of our community. And we do operate and fund that agency. Well, it's our agency, fund that portion within our agency. Hmm. So the growth of that particular PSR program is also a potential part of this $11 million budget deficit.
And again, this is all, you know, just the talk so far. And the mayor says there may have to be some tough choices being made. I'm, you know, pretty positive that you guys are going to have some input with the mayor, you know, at least even if not invited to, you might, you know, speak out and let them know what's important to keeping Portland safe.
We have been in discussions. The elected officials have been in discussions at their levels, and we have been asked to attend and respond to memos that we receive. So we have been an active player in the involvement. We're not necessarily certain everybody hears everything we say, but we're doing everything we possibly can to inform those elected officials that are the deciders in the room, if you will, the importance and the critical need for us to be able to have this $11 million deficit met such that we can simply provide our baseline foundation of core services. We have 171 members on duty every day running out of those big red rigs. On top of that, we have our preventions division running every day, going out and trying to make sure that they can find problems before they occur. So we're doing everything we can to inform elected officials the importance of a minimum of 171 members on duty each day. That includes the four that would be at a potentially closed fire station or the six that are operating out of those two Pearson rescues, in addition to the benefit of the community that the Portland Street Response is showing us. So we're doing what we can to say we're at our bare minimums. We've spent 2 decades of maintaining receiving cuts from the city, and we have done that through our administration. We are very lean administratively. We have these one-time monies that have funded some of these. The rescues were funded as a one-time money according to the last budget. So it isn't a regular part of the adopted budget. So we're certainly hopeful that there's a way that we can have additional monies granted to our budget such that we can continue to operate in what we feel is our core services to protect life, property, and the environment as best possible with all those 171 so that the community is safe.
That's what we're talking about. Rick, outstanding words. We appreciate your passion while you're doing your civic duty as well with jury duty. Thank you for taking time with us.
Hey, you bet. My pleasure.
That is Rick Graves with Portland Fire and Rescue.
We are big dog fans all around here at KXL and Portland's Morning News. At my house, we have Lucy, of course, our infamous spicy Aussie door. Also, Zero, the lovable bull terrier. Veronica has Mutts, Dusty, and Luna. Amanda has Square. And with all that in mind, our producer, James Shippey, has a story about a Portland-based nonprofit named Fences for Fido. Sadly, they had one of their trucks stolen, vandalized, and put out of commission. James Shippey spoke with them about their mission to help dogs across Oregon and Southwest Washington.
After crew members finished building a fence for a dog named Bullet, who was being chained 24/7 in the Dalles, they parked their car for the night in Vancouver.
We're not even sure exactly when it disappeared. The keys weren't in it, but it was right in front of their house. And sometime probably late Saturday night or early on Sunday, it just disappeared. So we put out the word to the media and on social media to get the public aware because it is such a distinctive truck. I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but for one thing, it's a big truck. It's a Toyota Tundra. And then it is covered in a vinyl wrap. Every inch of that truck has pictures of dogs and our logo and our contact information. It is a flashy truck. We made sure that the public knew what the truck looks like. And Portland police found the truck abandoned on a street in North Portland.
Although the truck is inoperable at the moment, that isn't stopping Michelle Blake, the executive director for Fences for Fido, from being grateful for the mission they set out to accomplish for dogs needing to be unchained, provided a fence, and eventually extending more services for dogs.
Our mission is as broad as it has ever been. We started in 2009 with this singular mission. Let's get dogs off chains. It's lonely. It's dangerous. It's frustrating for them. It can create behavior problems. CDC even, you know, reports that dogs that are chained are much more likely to be involved in a bite. And they're much more likely to be the subject of neighborhood complaints about barking. So there are a million reasons why we just wanted to get dogs off of chains. But when we went and started knocking on these families' doors and interacting with them, we learned about some of the barriers that they face. For instance, a lot of our families, they work 2 or 3 jobs. You know, sometimes that's what people need to do to get by. And so then if your vet clinic is only open from 8 to 5 on weekdays, how do you get to the vet clinic? And then when you get there, how do you afford ever-rising costs of veterinary care? You know, a spay or neuter surgery can be several hundred dollars at your community vet, and that's really hard for some families to come up with.
With a fence-building crew in Bend, they even started receiving requests from the Warm Springs Reservation.
We didn't see so many chained dogs there, but we saw free-roaming dogs that are in danger of getting hit by cars and getting lost and getting in fights. So we were building fences there for safety. And then we started to learn all of the other barriers that these families face. There is no veterinary clinic in Warm Springs. There's no animal shelter. There's no animal control agency. The nearest vet clinic is a half hour away in Madras. And then many of these families just don't have the means to pay several hundred dollars for a spay or neuter. And so we started bringing mobile services to the reservation.
For more info on Fences for Fido and their mission, head to KXL.com. James Shippey, FM News 101.
Thank you very much, James. Thanks to Michelle Blake, Executive Director for Fences for Fido. We hope they get their truck back up and running soon and can keep doing great things for our beloved doggos. Here's a question. How's your smoke alarm situation? Our good friends at the American Red Cross are all about keeping those things up and running. My partner Veronica got a visit at her house from them this week. In fact, American Red Cross is our KXL everyday hero. Here is a grim statistic. 7 people die every day in this country because of house fires. So it's time to be honest. When was the last time you checked to make sure the smoke alarms in your house actually work? Don't worry, our KXL Everyday Heroes will come to you and keep you safe.
You will recognize the name Rebecca Marshall. She was part of a KXL for a long time and now works for the American Red Cross. She asked if she could bring a team to my house to do a safety check. And here's where I fess up. I had knocked my smoke alarm off the ceiling of my hallway with a broom months ago because it kept going off randomly, and I never put it back up. I was going to do it quickly before they got there, but realized people do that, and maybe I could use myself as an example. So Rebecca brought the team over, and I had to confess I had 0 working alarms in my house. They installed 4. Sue Reynolds and Roman Perez walked me through how they work.
These have an integrated battery, so you don't need to change the battery for 10 years or until the battery dies. We do ask that you test the batteries.
Okay.
Just like normal on your the ones you used to have to swap batteries twice a year, I guess mm-hmm. that was the recommendation. You've got a little light that'll blink periodically to let you know that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a test button closest to the light, so you just press it. I'm going to hush it. Muffle the sound a little
bit. So testing is this
right.
one? Okay.
And then this button farther away is the hush or the silence button.
Okay.
All right, you can hit that button. It'll silence the alarm. It doesn't deactivate it. It'll still remain in the alarm state until the air is cleared.
Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
And if it's not cleared, it'll start beeping again.
So if it accidentally went off again, that's the one that I
mm-hmm.
punch. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Instead of getting
and
the
then,
broom.
And then clear,
yeah.
Yes, and then clear the, you can still get the broom if you needed to reach the button,
right.
like with
gotcha.
A broomstick. Yeah, so we mark them. With today's installation date and the replace after 3/30/34.
Gotcha.
So at 3034, you'll call us,
call us again. And we'll be back.
That sounds like a really long time away, doesn't it?
That's scary.
The Red Cross helps you draw out an escape plan in case of emergency based on the layout of your house. Vicki Garvin had a lot of tips.
This is our home fire safety checklist. So you want to make sure that you keep your eyes on whatever you're cooking. Reason is most home fires start in the kitchen. And if you have a fireplace, space heater, or baseboard heaters, you want to make sure that it's 3 feet away from anything that could be flammable. And the newer space heaters are typically pretty good about not starting fires, but there is still the potential because there can be surges, there can be manufacturing errors and whatnot.
And there are a lot more tips. The Red Cross teams are going to homes all this month to explain them. Next up, Albany, Salem, and Kelso. The goal is to install 50,000 alarms in 20,000 households.
Big thanks there to Rebecca, Sue, Roman, and Vicki. Nice job, Veronica. I love the fact that the Red Cross is actually happy to come out to your house and make sure all your smoke alarms are in working condition and make sure that you have a great plan and your house is as safe as possible. You're listening to the 512th edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. Let's talk tech with our tech expert, Brian Westbrook, shall we? It sounds like Google's Android phones are getting with the program when it comes to getting found when lost. And the FCC is trying to make it easier for consumers to save money when buying internet bundles without having to dig into the ultra fine print. Android users are getting a new way to find their devices, and the FCC might mandate nutrition labels for broadband plans. With us, our Brian Westbrook. He is our tech expert with the latest. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with this phone tracking deal. This works even when the phone is powered down for Android, huh?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. If you have a Pixel 8, the latest phone from Google, you can actually track the phone when it is turned off. And this caught my eye. Of course, I had to ask the question, how does this work? It works, we're told, because there is a little bit of battery life in the Bluetooth technology that detects where your devices are. Now, if you have an iPhone, you're probably thinking, well, haven't we had this for a while? Yes, on the Android side, this is a little bit of new technology. And one of the things I'm looking forward to as a Pixel user myself is when we will have tracking devices like the little AirTags, because I'm tired of calling mom to find my bag when it gets lost when I travel. So I'm really excited about an alternative on the Pixel side. I'm understanding that is coming soon.
Is there a little tiny robot inside the phone that's kind of waving, here I am, here I am?
It says, here I am. Unfortunately, it's so tiny you can't see or hear it. So that's a little bit of a problem. But we'll work on that. I think a bigger robot needed.
What about other things like your wallet? I mean, will we be able to track that?
Yeah, that's where I'm hoping the AirTag alternative will come in. So far, Android has had third-party options, but they've required you to download the app in order to create this sort of mesh network. And that's really what this needs, is it needs all Android users to be a participant, to play along, whether you track devices or not. Otherwise, there just isn't the radio system. There isn't the world for these devices to find their mothership, if you will. So this gives that technology, and it makes it very similar to what the iPhones already have.
All right, Brian Westbrook, let's talk nutrition. Not for food, but broadband plans. What's happening?
I'm very excited about this one. So the FCC is finally able to mandate what they're calling nutrition labels. And I think this is pretty good analogy. No, this is not Lunchables in your school cafeteria, but it is the ability to say, okay, your monthly price is this much. The number of fees is this much. Here's how much you're going to get out of this. And really, to make it simple, if you want another example, think about your credit card statements, where on the back of that statement, there's the interest rates and all of that disclosures. It's clear, it's easy, it's consistent across credit card providers. In this case, it'll be the same with broadband. I'm very excited about just the basic information being up front. As somebody who recently fired Comcast because we couldn't figure out the fees, we couldn't figure out how much they're charging us for service, this is going to make it more clear in the consumer's best interest. I'm very excited about this. It's been 8 years in the making.
I wish that everything that was out there that we could spend our money on would give me a little nutrition type of label, because sometimes I don't read the fine print.
And whether you read the fine print or not, sometimes you just can't find the fine print, or you don't know about the fine print until you get your first statement. The White House has certainly been kind of rallying against junk fees, whether it be anything from travel to broadband. So I think this is a step in the right direction. We do need more clarity on some of these fees.
Yeah, just this weekend, I had stayed at an Airbnb didn't realize that I also had to pay the city transient occupancy taxes. Didn't see that on there. So now Airbnb is yelling at me for not doing it. I was like, well, where was this? Oh, buried down there in line like 7,927, you know, way down in the bottom.
Always look on page 9. I think that's where those fees are hidden. Oh, boy.
42. That's the answer.
Always.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it.
That is our tech expert, Brian Westbrook. You can follow him at Brian M. Westbrook on Instagram, his Facebook page, Threads, and on X at Brian Westbrook.
All right. Finally, let's stop and just dream for a second, or at least appreciate the fact that someone's dreams in Portland were surely fulfilled as the ridiculous $1.3 billion Powerball jackpot was won right here in the Rose City last week. The single ticket was sold at a Plaid Pantry convenience store on North Columbia Boulevard. Let's take you back to earlier in the week when the Oregon Lottery held a press conference to announce the win and the location where the ticket was sold. You will hear Melanie Maceris with the Oregon Lottery and Jonathan Polonsky, Plaid Pantry president and CEO, talking with reporters. Melanie does a little Q&A with the press, and since the questions were pretty much impossible to hear, you'll just catch her answers, which are easy to understand. It's an awfully exciting event talking about an astronomical Powerball jackpot.
First, I just want to say congratulations to Plaid Pantry on the sale of the fourth largest Powerball jackpot ticket in history. On Saturday, April 6th, the only ticket in the country to match all six numbers in the $1.3 billion jackpot was purchased right here. We are incredibly excited that this happened in Oregon and that we're able to celebrate this moment with our retail partner, Plaid Pantry. In addition to the commission that our retailers earn for selling lottery products day to day, a sale on a jackpot of this size also comes with a $100,000 bonus for Plaid Pantry. I know you are all very interested in learning more about the winner of the Powerball jackpot. Yesterday, a ticket holder came forward, and we are working through our process to verify the win. As you might imagine, a jackpot of this size is unprecedented here in Oregon. It will take time for us to complete the steps and the measures required to award the prize money. The steps include verifying the ticket information and following a process for Oregon to be able to collect the money from the multi-state lottery game that we participate in. By law, Oregon lottery winners, with very few exceptions, cannot remain anonymous. So once we have more information to share about the winner, we will be providing it. I want to just share a few numbers with all of you to understand how significant this win is for the state of Oregon. Thanks to sales from the run-up of the jackpot, which began back on January 2nd, we will be transferring $7.6 million back to the state. This money will fund public programs such as education, state parks, economic development, veteran services, and more. The retailers in Oregon who sell our Powerball tickets earned $1.79 million in commissions, and that does not include the prize bonuses that I mentioned. I'd now like to introduce Plaid Pantry's president and CEO, Jonathan Polonsky, for some remarks.
Thank you, Melanie. I don't have a ton to add. I mean, we're as anxious as you all to learn which one of our customers won this huge amount of money. But I can say that as a local company, our headquarters are here in Portland, Oregon. Everything's, you know, we're a national company, but we're not. We're hyper-local. Most of our stores are right here in Portland. And all our associates are ecstatic that we were able to sell this winning ticket. And I think it's great for the community. There's some, you know, Portland's got some challenges right now, so it's really great to have something positive to talk about. So can't say enough about the fact that we have a great partnership with Lottery. We sell a lot of their products. It's a great thing for, you know, an escape for a customer to come in and spend just a couple bucks and think that maybe they might win. And look what happened. Someone won. So it's pretty cool. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have if I can. Yeah, so we'll receive $100,000 at the end of this process. Again, locally owned and operated, all the money stays in the community and within our company. Each store rolls up to our company headquarters, but they all have their own P&Ls. And so this store will have $100,000 go into their bottom line in the month of April, which is going to do great for, you know, the store of the associates participate in a bonus program, and so that will help, you know, have a bigger bonus for them. Assistant managers are and above are in our company participate in the store bonus program.
How much might that be?
It's a mathematical equation, so we'll have to wait and see at the end of the month what there's a bunch of components that roll into it, including, you know, shrink and labor and a bunch of stuff. So it's, I can't answer that. I think, as I said, the money will go into a bonus pool for the management. Our managers generally do a pretty good job of taking care of everybody in the store because it really is a team effort. And that's how we kind of run the company in general. It's more of a family type operation. So people will be taken care of for sure. Yeah, so for me, it was a process, right? I mean, I joke, I bought a lottery ticket and I told my wife, oh, I think we're going to win this time. And so I first heard that it was Oregon. I'm like, oh, well, odds just went up. And then I heard it was Portland, Oregon. I'm like, oh, odds went way up. We got a lot of stores here in Portland. And then I heard it was in the Cully neighborhood. Okay, well, now we're down to two of my stores. And then finally, we got the word that it was this store. And I've gotten, you know, I don't know about 100, but I've gotten many, many, many emails, texts from vendors, customers, all very excited that Plaid got to participate in this. And I think they'll be very excited when the winner's finally announced as well. No secret. I mean, we have great customers that come in every day and play the games. And I hope people keep doing that for a long time to come.
Yeah, because of security purposes, we can't get into too many specifics. We have a process to vet the claimant. We have a process that would look at the ticket itself and the retail purchase. And as I mentioned earlier, we also have steps that involve us getting the money from the multi-state lottery organization that manages Powerball. And so because of all of those moving pieces, it's going to take us a couple weeks before we can award the money to the winner. You obviously, yes, have to have a ticket to prove that you have won. Yes. As I mentioned, we have security processes that we just need to keep close in order to make sure the process is able to operate properly. I can say that, again, like, I can't share any other details about the winner at this stage, but as I said, we will be very excited to share with you once we've gone through all the steps necessary who this person is. I think it'll be a couple of weeks. As I mentioned, this is like an unprecedented amount of money. We've never had a jackpot this large in Oregon, one here. There's a lot of moving pieces in terms of, like, we have to work with the Multi-State Lottery Association to be able to get the money transferred to Oregon in order to pay the winner. So those are just some of the logistical things that are going on. So we do not offer those services, but we highly encourage people who win a prize like this to seek out professional guidance from a financial planner or an attorney before they claim the prize. We always recommend that people sign the back of the ticket because it is like holding money. So if you were to lose it and you haven't done that and someone finds it on the ground, it then becomes theirs. There is no other way to prove who owned the ticket. So that's a really important thing to consider going forward. If you are playing lottery, make sure you sign the back of the ticket. Obviously, we support. Yes. Yeah, I'm like, you need to ask him that question. We are just, I think, so excited that this happened in Oregon. I know we see these big jackpots go to other states, and I think sometimes there's some disappointment that comes with that. And so the fact that we are able to celebrate something this big in Oregon is just, it's once in a lifetime. So since I've worked here, I always tell people the best part of my job is that I get to meet new millionaires all the time. And I would say a lot of times they may be in shock. They may not have known that this was going to happen to them, even though they were hoping for it. When it does happen, it's always like so exciting and fun. And I think one of the themes that I see, like, across in talking to some of our winners is just that overall, like, excitement. And they have moments that they like to share about when they found out and the dreams of what they might do with the money. I mean, I think one of the things I want to again stress is that because of the large amount of money we're talking about, we have to work with the other entity in order to even get the payment to award the prize. So that's like one element that makes this a lot different than, say, a smaller win, like a $1 million win. So that's like one of the key things for sure. But we also just want to make sure we're being really diligent about how this is handled.
And there is Melanie Maceras with the Oregon Lottery and Plaid Pantry President and CEO Jonathan Polonsky talking about the insane lottery-winning ticket sold in Portland, a $1.3 billion Powerball prize. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter X. If you missed anything, the podcast is up and running. You can catch it wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 512 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media, USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.